Jesus tells us to take up our cross and follow him. You're listening to Crosswalk with Pastor Steve Winery. Crosswalk is the radio ministry of Calvary Chapel Tri-Cities, and it is our aim to lead you to the cross through the teaching of God's Word.
Come break our culture, tear down our pride. Lord, take your church and purify. Oh, we are ready to stand in your love. Come, King Jesus, deliver us. Oh, my King is coming. Restless hearts, be still.
Today's Crosswalk is pre-recorded from Truth Set Free.
Basically, when you're talking about, and it's not adultery in the passage, you guys, it's sexual immorality. And so when you're talking about sexual immorality, that includes all kinds of stuff. And so this, it includes homosexuality, which is obviously adultery. It includes bestiality. It includes, you know, there's a whole list of things that porneia, that's the Greek word. It would include, obviously, incest, a number of different things. And so what I'm saying is that in that passage, the term is not adultery. And so adultery includes sexual immorality, but it's not confined to that. And the reason that I'm saying that to you is because we live in a culture where people are constantly coming up with definitions of sexual activity that they think excludes them from the from a situation with adultery. I did not have sexual relations with that woman, you know, for example. That's a famous quote. Mm-hmm. And that kind of thing. And so they did, that person did commit porneia. And so Hillary Clinton had the right to divorce in that situation. In any case, what happens in that situation, Old Testament-wise, if a person had done something like that, what would happen is they would kill them. And so there wouldn't be an issue of divorce in the passage. It's one of the reasons that God gives the ability to divorce in that situation, because if the Old Testament law was being adjudicated on these people, there would be no issue. The offended spouse would be either a widow or a widower at that point. And so obviously they would be free to remarry. The other person would be dead. So, you know, that's another thing altogether. But the point that Jesus is making here is that the marriage bond is broken in that situation. And a woman or a man who has had their spouse be unfaithful to them is free to remarry, because there is no marriage at that point, in the sense of they are free to divorce. There is a marriage contract, and that needs to be taken care of. But they are free to divorce and remarry, because the marriage vows have been broken. The bond has been broken at that point. And so I don't see anything in the passage that confines it to the offended party. We want it to, because generally speaking, we are vindictive. And I want absolute justice in a situation. And I don't think it's fair that they should be able to go off and remarry while the other person has to deal with the junk that comes from their bad actions. But again, when we're looking at these things, need to understand that God is way more forgiving than I am, and we are bound by Scripture. You know, it's not the kind of thing where I get to come along and make certain rules just because. And so again, that's basically what you've got. You got a situation where somebody has been unfaithful. And at that point, certificate of divorce is allowed, especially specifically in cases of hardness of heart. And I think that Jesus is talking about hardness of heart of the person committing this sin, not the hardness of heart of the other person. And that's one of the things that I always tell people in a situation like that. So, yeah, I don't see it confining it to the one person.
You have that passage where the disciples are like, well, if that's the case, it'd be better.
Yeah, it's the same passage.
To marry at all. If you have two believers, God's desire for reconciliation is mm-hmm. made evident, and by their reaction, they understand that covenant being that serious, that God's attitude towards the marriage relationship. Yeah. So it's not a pass.
Yeah. Well, when you're talking about a free-for-all divorce.
Yeah.
not in this specific situation. And so the original question is it lawful for a man to divorce his wife for just any reason? And then he says, have you not read that at the beginning God made the male and female and so on? What God has joined together, let not man separate. And they're reacting to the fact that you have to trust your marriage relationship, your physical relationship to another person. And if they just walk away from you, then you have to wait and you have to be reconciled to them.
Right. Okay.
In that situation. And that's what they're worried about.
Okay. Yeah.
So over in 1 Corinthians 7, it talks about if an unbeliever wants to depart, you're to let them depart. And a believer is not bound in that situation.
Right.
God's called us to peace. And the binding there is talking about being bound to a marriage where an unbeliever doesn't want to be married to you. And that's another reason. That's abandonment. And so that's another reason for a biblical remarriage, a biblical divorce and remarriage. But that's in the case of an unbeliever.
You know, when you look at the concept of the Old Testament, if adultery is committed, that person's killed off, we look at that as, or the culture will look at that as grotesque, and you can look at it as God's grace now under the New Testament covenant. But the carnage that happens from the divorce, the kids, the people involved, the spiritual implications of no dad growing up, whatever, there is a lot of baggage and carnage and destruction that come from God's grace in keeping that guy or gal alive. Mm-hmm. That it's, when you look at the Old Testament, it's like, well, is that really better or is it not better?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Well, one of the reasons that they're not doing the law here, they're under the law. They just don't have the right to capital punishment.
Explain that.
Well, when the Jews wanted to kill Jesus, they had to go to Pilate to get the okay for that, because they didn't have the right to capital punishment. They lost that right in Israel at that point.
Interesting.
Yeah. And so, you know, basically it had been probably about 50 years since they had, well, not 50 years. It was probably about 25 years, basically, that they didn't have the right to capital punishment. And so you see situations where they push the issue. And so you have the woman caught in adultery,
right,
and they want to stone her. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there are times when the Jews would just, in an uproar type of situation, do these things and deal with the consequences that would come down from the Roman authorities because they overstepped their authority in a situation. That would, you know, a Roman governor would probably look at that and say, that's a riot. They didn't really care about what people did to other people in a lot of cases back in those days. It was a pretty intense time.
Politics.
But, yeah. Whole political thing. Do I want to make a big fat deal out of this and bring these people to justice, or am I just going to let this go? And so again, you have that. There's a number of things politically that are going on during the time. But, you know, to your point, it's one of the reasons that God said that he hates divorce in Malachi. And he talked about the fact that it covers your garments with violence. And that's, again, that's what you see in that situation. And my mom had 4 marriages by the time I got out of high school, and just all kinds of junk that came from that. Again, to your point, and in a lot of situations, when I've looked at some of the ramifications that come in families because of a hard-hearted unwillingness, and specifically in the cases that I've seen of men to be faithful to their wives, it would have been better for the family if the guy had just died. If you'd gotten a car accident, their life would be better.
Yeah.
You know, and it's part of the reason that God does this. Another thing that you have in these situations is the whole issue of repentance. And not to just be a hard case about this, but people who know that they're going to die are seriously thinking about where they're going to end up. And I think that a lot of people end up in hell because they're like frogs in a pot of water that's being heated up slowly, where, you know, if, you know the, sure, the whole yeah. illustration. If you tried to throw a frog into a pot of hot water, it would jump out. Mm-hmm. But if you heat it up slowly, and I don't know who went and did this. That's a sick thing to do. But if you heat it up slowly, apparently the frog will just sit there. It's like that with a lot of people. And so I've known some guys that have, again, been hard-hearted about their unfaithfulness to their wives, and they've ended up in a situation where they started out Christians, and then they are radically got a lifestyle that is anti-Christ. And if it had been Old Testament times, those guys would have repented.
Yeah.
You know, and so...
You see that with the drug laws that have been passed and what it's done to the societies and downtowns and stuff because
yep.
of that.
Yep.
All right. Moving on. Pastor Steve, here's my next one. I see that this is from Marty. I see that the final destination of the lost, even those that are in hell, is the lake of fire. What is the lake of fire and how long does it consciously last?
Book of Revelation, this is one of those places that specifically talks about the issue with the lake of fire. And it says, this is the third angel that's flying through the heavens in the time of the tribulation period. And this is a pronouncement of judgment on anybody who receives the mark of the beast. And it says in verse 9 of chapter 14, then a third angel followed them, saying with a loud voice, if anyone worships the beast in his image and receives his mark on his forehead or on his hand, he himself shall also drink of the wine of the wrath of God, which is poured out full strength into the cup of his indignation. He shall be tormented with fire and brimstone in the presence of the holy angels and in the presence of the Lamb, and the smoke of their torment ascends forever and ever, and they have no rest day or night who worship the beast in his image and whoever receives the mark of his name. And so... no rest, day or night, forever and ever. That's the picture there. And so if you have no rest, that speaks to consciousness in that situation. And so I think it's an eternal thing. And so we are going to live forever. And it's not an issue of whether you're going to live forever. It's an issue of where you're going to live forever. And so the picture here is the lake of fire. And so you see the indignation of God. You see them tormented with fire and brimstone. You see the smoke of their torment ascending forever and ever, and they have no rest day or night. In other places, it talks about the fact that there is an unending torment, that there is they have no rest day or night. In other places also, just as it says here, their worm does not die. It's like the smallest, type of animal continues to live in that state. That's the picture behind it. And so it's not a good place. And so I don't want to minimize the passage and say that there's no literal fire and brimstone, because it talks about fire and brimstone there. And so...
what verse was that again?
That's chapter 14, verse 10. And so I don't want to minimize that. I don't know what the lake of fire is like. I know that at the very least, if he's speaking figuratively on any kind of level, if he's using a metaphor, it's like a lake of fire, like fire and brimstone. If he's using a metaphor in that passage, the reality in a metaphor is always more intense than the metaphor itself. And so you can't use a metaphor to get out of the torment that we're talking about here. In fact, the torment would be worse than being thrown into a lake of fire. And again, you have that. One of the things that you have as a description of people who end up in this place is a passage in the book of 2 Thessalonians that says that they're destroyed from the presence of God forever. And the word destroyed isn't what we think of necessarily as destroyed. It literally is a word that means ruin. And so you have beings that are in the lake of fire that have been ruined.
Okay, so I was going to ask you that when it says the devil and his angels are cast into the lake of fire, mm-hmm. would you distinguish that as a different place or event or situation than Revelation 14, where that place of ruin is like the final culmination, and this is like...
No, I think it's Gehenna. It's the lake of fire.
Same place.
Same place, but they can't see each other. It's not like you're sitting there. You know, the Bible also describes it as outer darkness.
Right.
And so I don't know that it matters, you know, at that point, because if you're talking about a situation where you're literally there alone in torment and you can't see anyone, you don't need distinct places. At that point, I mean, what are they going to do? Swim over to somebody else?
Yeah.
You know, it's like, I don't see that happening. And so the picture there is alone in the dark, screaming forever. That's the picture. And so not good.
Not good.
It's why God sent his son to the earth to save us. You know, if you're going to be saved, you got to be saved out of something that's a danger to you. And this is obviously a danger. And the deal with this, I was talking earlier about they've been destroyed or ruined away from the presence of God forever. It's the idea that they are outside of God's presence. And so you have a situation there where, for example, right now, there's nobody on this planet that's outside of God's presence. And as a matter of fact, the whole planet itself is communicating God's presence to us. And so the glory of God is found in the heavens. The glory of God is found in his creation. And so there's all kinds of examples of the glory of God. The goodness of God is found in the fact that he gives light and life to all men, and that he's involved in their lives up until the point where they get here. And so everybody is experiencing the presence of God on one level or another, even atheists who absolutely do not believe in him. Jesus said, it rains on the just and on the unjust, you know, exactly the same. And the point that he's making there is that God doesn't discriminate between believers and unbelievers in the sense of pouring out the blessing of the creation of God on them. I can have an unbeliever that lives next door to me, and it's going to rain on his house as much as it is going to rain on my house. Sunshine's coming out on his house in the same way it's coming out on my house. And so God makes no distinction there, but there's coming a time when he does.
Yeah, when I studied hell, that was the scariest thing to me, because it's the opposite of everything that God is in his nature. So what's the opposite of pleasure?
Yeah,
torment.
In his presence is fullness of pleasure, and is fullness of joy, and at his right hand are pleasures forevermore. And so, yeah, torment and lack of joy is sorrow. And lack of light is darkness, and again, lack of pleasure is pain, and so on and so forth. And so what's happening with these people is they are getting exactly what they want, eternity without God. They're getting it. And that happens to be something that if you actually get, you're going to be in torment. It's not even necessarily a situation where God has to actively do something to them. It's just he just withdraws himself from them, and we're made to be in his presence, and that becomes absolute torment.
Yep.
So.
Don't be that.
Yep. You don't want to be that guy.
Okay. This is actually an Instagram clip that I sent you, but this is a question. Have you guys heard of this, and does it have any biblical relevance? I thought Jesus is to come back right after the sound of trumpets. Would like to know your thoughts, and I don't know if you watched this or not, but... there's these videos going around where they're recording these sounds, and it's in Israel and in different places around the world that's making these weird sounds. I could have pulled it up and played a version of it, but I think you watched one of them or something or seen it. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, first off, when I see stuff like that, it's on the internet. And so I have no idea if it's real or
who
not.
Who knows?
Yeah, who knows? I have no idea if it's real or not. I've never actually talked to somebody that I could trust that has actually had that happen with them. And so I don't know that that is going on in the first place. And so I am skeptical. I am skeptical of this. I have looked into this a while back. I didn't actually do it in the context of this, but I have looked into this a while back. And some of the videos that are being put on the internet, you could trace the sound down and find out that somebody was using a sound from some other situation and just putting it over the video. And so I'd be highly skeptical about it. I have actually heard about some things that are going on with the situation that we have with the Earth's magnetic field, and there are different places on the Earth where the magnetic field has different intensities and even actually flips in certain areas. And I'm not talking about the major flip of the magnetic field that people are talking about. There's some places on the planet where the magnetic field is kind of weird, and there are noises that are connected to that people have actually, scientists have actually recorded. And so there's a possibility that something like that is going on. Could God use this to warn people? Sure. I know people in Israel. Actually, I got a good friend who's going to be coming out in the next couple of weeks here, and I will ask him, have you heard any sounds of trumpets in Jerusalem? He's in Jerusalem routinely. Or do you know anybody that has actually heard that? And, unless I get, even from him, unless I get something that can be corroborated, I'm going to end up being skeptical about it. So, and if it's there, then yeah, maybe.
The trumpet in the Bible that is the last trumpet or whatever, don't you think that that is something that like all believers hear, and it's connected to us getting out of here? And
yeah, that's in 1 Corinthians chapter 15, and it says that when the last trumpet is blown, that our bodies will be changed. And so if this had anything to do with the last trumpet, well, it doesn't.
Yeah.
Because I'm still here.
My knee still hurts.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah.
Good on that one. Moving on to Stefan from Brazil. And he says, I'm reaching out to you because I have a question about a Bible translation. In the Portuguese NIV, New International Version, the word Shiloh is left out in a passage where, when I looked in the King James Version, it appears and seems to be referring to Jesus. However, I've had trouble finding the Hebrew translation or meaning behind the word. Could you help me understand this better?
Yeah, basically what's happening with the NIV is they're translating the word for you. And it's a term that means he to whom it belongs. It actually comes from a term that means rest or peace. And so shalom, for example, is the Jewish word for peace. And so it comes from a term that's somewhat like that. The Jews have some writings. Excuse me, I'm getting over a cold. But the Jews have some writings. One of them is called, some of them are called Targums. And so there is a Targum that actually translates that as Shiloh, and it is used by the Jews as a term for the Messiah. And in that Targum, it talks about that. And so I think that the right translation of that is Shiloh. I think it's a title in that passage. It happens to also mean he to whom it belongs. And so what you're getting is instead of there being, that would be a transliteration, Shiloh, or it would be Shiloh, from the Hebrew into the English, you are getting the translation of that term. And so it would be as if the name Stephen was translated crown in the book of Acts. And so you got something that's along the same lines there. That's all that is.
Perfect. Okay, here is my next one from Kristen. Pastor Steve, regarding tongues. Growing up, I was taught that talking in tongues was used for a specific place in time and that it's not to be in these days. Is this true?
Short answer is no, that is not true.
That's all the time we have for today. If you have questions for Pastor Steve, please email me at crosswalkradio@gmail.com, or you can leave a voicemail or text message to 707-872-7677.
Crosswalk is the radio ministry of Calvary Chapel Tri-Cities in Kennewick, Washington. If you're wanting to know more about what it means to follow Christ, then please contact our church office by phone at 509-736-2086. You can also look us up online at calvary-tricities.org. There you will find a wide variety of Steve's teachings to listen to or to download for free. If you want to join us for church sometime, we're located at 10611 West Clearwater Avenue in Kennewick, Washington. Our Sunday service times are 8:30 and 10:30 a.m. We also meet at 6 p.m. Sundays and 6:30 p.m. Wednesdays in our sanctuary. We hope you've been blessed today and will join us again next time on Crosswalk. My King is come.